Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's go. Do you know what I was just thinking there to myself? So if you're listening to this main, you're obviously a big fan or a cheapskate. But on our Patreon episode there, mm-hmm. we were talking about what stories we had and what we could talk about. And I was like, I could give you an update in the nine month cruise.
Oh, yeah.
And then I didn't.
Yes.
Like, we should edit those bits out.
Oh, yeah. No. It just brings everyone back.
Yeah.
They're like, they'll get around to it eventually. Welcome to the Creep Dive. There's three of us. I'm Jen, O-D-W-Y-E-R.
I'm Cassie Delaney.
Lovely to meet you.
Sophie White.
Best-selling author Sophie White.
I couldn't remember what my nickname was for a minute. How? It's been so long since we've introduced ourselves.
This is a podcast.
And it must be so alienating to new people.
I know. That's why I'm saying this is a podcast about the weird and wonderful and the dark and deranged, with a few sprinkles of desperate sadness the odd time. Today, I'd like to open with a brilliant Twitter thread.
Yay.
Wrong.
Reddit.
The title is, "Have you ever seen a celebrity acting like a bell end?"
Oh, great.
Love a bit of it. You love to hear it.
Have you ever?
So here's re for merch. Not sure this counts, but I used to work in an electronics boutique in 2000 during the launch of the PS2. Demand was super high. Everybody had to fill out pre-order form, pay a deposit. We only got allocated stock based on ordered consoles. Anyway, so the afternoon before midnight release, there was a bit of a buzz. Loads of people coming in to ask could they get one, marveling over the demo machine, etc. Anyway, the phone goes, I answer, and the voice at the other end says, "Hey mate, it's Grant from Massive Attack. Just wondering when I can get my PS2. I asked if he'd ordered one. He assured me that he had. I checked all through the orders, couldn't find it. Asked him if he was sure it had been this shop. He was adamant it had been, even describing the shop. I was apologetic and said, look, we don't have any on record of an order, blah, blah. He cut me off and started with the, nah, mate, nah, I ordered it. I want it tomorrow. Demanding to speak to the boss, raised all kind of hell on the phone. Said he would be there at midnight. If we didn't have a console for him, he would go mental. Anyway, he didn't turn up. Didn't have a pre-order at all. Was just trying to trade on his name to get one. Don't know if it counts, so I thought he was a bit of a bell end. He fucking was.
So good.
Can
I predict that this is going to be a heavy James Corden thread?
There is James Corden.
Have to be, yeah.
Excellent. Okay, come on, give us.
Paul Hollywood, total prick.
Oh, well, believe it, yeah.
So Paul Hollywood used to come into my shop. People would ask him for pictures and he'd yell at them to just leave him alone, which I guess is fair enough. The staff, however, had to put up with his horrible attitude. Once served him a bottle of vodka and asked if he wanted anything else, to which he just replied, "Just give me the fucking vodka." eventually.
Oh, a bit of cocaine, I'd say, Paul.
Absolutely right. Alleged. Eventually, he started sending his girlfriend in while he sat out in the convertible outside looking pissed off. Although once he did come into the shop, bought 3 bags of Watsits, sat in the car outside, ate all 3 bags and threw the rubbish out the window and drove off on a fucking dick.
That is deranged.
What a total wanker. Hang on. Well, I worked with him at a motorsport event a few years ago.
With Paul?
With Paul. This is Captain Wow 247, whereby he drove one of our cars in front of a massive crowd. He was massively entitled bellend to pretty much everyone, and I thought he came across as a complete weapon. Having said that, I was at a Brands Hatch a few months ago working, and when he saw me on the grid, he remembered my name. Still a cock though. Hang on, I'll get down to the let's have a load. I'm a tree surgeon, writes Mr. Janes. And one day, Danny Dyer walks by.
I love Danny Dyer.
And he just goes, cut them fucking trees, boys.
That is so Danny Dyer.
Edit. Danny Dyer was not acting like a bellend. He was just being cool as fuck.
He was being cool as fuck. I love him so much.
This is bad. Andrew Lloyd Webber. Driving into the middle of a funeral procession for a child who had drowned in a village next to where he lives. Everyone else, including myself, waiting patiently for the funeral cars to enter the churchyard. He drove straight through in his 4x4 up on the curb to get past. Obviously, he thought he was too important to wait. I can't stand him or any of his work to that day.
God.
Philip Schofield shushed me in 2008 when I was working on This Morning. Who's been silenced now, Phil? David Walliams.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-oh. Oh, my God. This guy.
Absolute bellend. Hang on, I'll come back to your... So David Walliams said to my dad, but don't you know who I am? When he was in my dad's taxi and expecting not to have to pay. What a fucking prick.
Oh my God.
So here's upstairs.
That's the
jump.
Very least of David Walliams' lore.
Oh yeah. Here's another person. Oh, I drove him a few times when I was a chauffeur. Probably just before he got famous. Bad vibes off that dude. He spent the entire journey talking about himself on the phone. Looking back now, I honestly wonder whether anyone was on the other end of the line.
So funny.
Oh, I would do that. You know, I did a fake phone call in front of you guys. No, it didn't land. It was so annoying.
What?
Did you just carry on and we just allowed the conversation?
When was this? Give us the context.
The context is that sometimes I get little schemes up in my head and I'm all like, yeah, yeah. And I'm going around like scheming and loving it. And basically, on our shows before Christmas, I knew that I had brought my Santa Geen mask and was going to be appearing as Santa Geen. And I was really excited about my little plan. And I told you guys that we were having a special guest at the shows. And I said to Jen at some point, like, we were outside in the smoking area, and I was like, I just have to liaise with this guest guy.
And walked off on the phone.
I kind of like stayed. You're just gonna nod it. And then this guy was there in the smoking area annoying me, and Jen was like, I'm going to get into the spirit of this guy. He was one of those like really owl guys.
Oh yeah, of course.
In the smoking area. And like, look, you're either their buzz or you're not.
Yeah.
And if you're on their buzz, great. Have at it. Have a bit of fun with them. They'll make you sing a song. They'll sing you a song. Blah, blah, blah. I just wasn't in the mood. I tend not to be, as a sober person, that much in the mood for that person. Mm. And anyway, when he started annoying me and trying to make me sing a song, I pulled out my phone and said, I should get this. It's the guest. Do you not remember this?
I do.
And I went back.
Remember this,
right,
as well, yeah.
But here's how in deep I was. I went back. I just stepped inside the pub, and to my right was like a window that was looking directly onto the table where you were sat, Jen. And I proceeded to be on this fake phone call in the window for, I'd say, at least 4 or 5 minutes, just hoping and waiting that you'd notice and become even more intrigued about who the special guest was. I was really alone in it. I was alone. I was really at, I think I was at a bit of a low ebb.
That is the most we've just become used to your behavior story of all time. It wasn't an eye blink or a shrug.
I was giving it. I mean, I could have, I don't know, like the acting that I was doing on that fake phone call in that little window, in that little nook in the pub. And Jen was just out there vaping. Bitch didn't care. Okay, go on. Give us more. Give us more.
No, I'm not going to give you any more.
What?
Well, no,
that's
I just decided to withdraw
and just no fucking warning that this is the last one so that we can adjust ourselves.
Oh, it. No, I won't give you any more.
Okay, wait, though. Is this a main or a hive? Can we give some of our own celebrity ones?
This is a main. Yes, you can.
Oh, well, I was about to nominate your one.
Which one was mine? The two-finger Kit Kat.
That one, but also the one of your... The one who was watching a video of herself on the phone.
Oh, God, yeah, I'll tell both of them. Okay, I was working for a friend who was doing some photography.
Celebrity styling.
Yes, photographing celebrities. And a very big Irish celebrity by the name of was in. Is that her name?
Well, yeah, it is. You're not supposed to give it out in a public episode.
Well, whatever it happened, I'm allowed.
It's weird because I remember this.
Well, no, I'm not.
You'd want to be dead fucking certain now if you're going to tell this story.
Whatever. It wasn't that bad. So anyway, I was like doing the dog's body stuff, just getting bits of shite for people. And I was like, do you want anything? And she wanted a two-finger Kit Kat from the shop, right? And I was like, I think two-finger Kit Kats come in multi-packs and not...
I'm not qualified to procure a multi-pack.
I'm like, sure, but do you want to fuck a multi-pack of these things? Or can I just get you a four-finger Kit Kat and you can break it up in two? Or what's the lay of the land here? And she was like, I just want a two-finger Kit Kat. So that was her.
It's so psychotic. But I like to think that maybe I can see your side in this, okay? Because... there is a difference.
Yeah.
Between a two-finger Kit Kat and two fingers of a Kit Kat.
I'll give you two fingers.
Two-finger Kit Kat, chocolate enrobed on all sides.
Yeah.
Okay. Two fingers of a Kit Kat have been broken away.
True.
And often that like broken edge will be laid bare.
Or contain more chocolate that is thieved from the other one.
Just depends, doesn't it?
Depends. It's a risk. That she was not willing to take.
You needed to sit down and share with her those ideas.
It was just so fucking annoying.
You could be like, look, I'll tell you what.
And what did you do?
I can't remember. I definitely said something under my breath to myself. Like,
shocking.
I'll give you two fingers.
One in the pink and one in the stink.
And then the next one was I was in town. I was in the Herbert Park in Dublin in a playground, or whatever, playground with my kids, just trying not to lose the will to live. And I noticed a celebrity on a bench sitting alone.
By the name of Brenda Fricker.
Well, I didn't actually notice her. I noticed that I recognized a song that it was playing from her phone that she was watching.
She was a musician.
And I will run away. And she was kind of mouthing along. And I was like,
no,
that's your one out of the course. Watching herself. And
maybe
singing
she
along.
Maybe she was a lookalike and she was studying.
That's an idea.
It was definitely her. And I had met her before and she is very nice. She was just having a weird moment that I just happened to witness and tell everyone about.
So there you go.
Thank you.
Do you have any Cass?
I have some, but I'm not saying them publicly.
Did I ever tell you about my Christopher Walken one?
No.
So I worked in a gallery in town and we were doing a show, Bob Dylan's show. It was all retrospective of photographs of his stuff, of his him through a particular era of time.
So he was this curious character in the baseball cap.
So I was like, I'll let him in, an old lad, real tall and spindly. And he came in and didn't even look at anything, just beelined directly to me, wanting to talk about currency. And I was like, fucking hell. What does this man want from me? Back and forth, nonsense, like absolute nonsense about the currency of this American guy.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, just another one of those people I'm trapped with now until I can get him out of this glass box I'm in with him. Back and forth. And you wouldn't believe about where the money comes from. And I can't even do his accent. Can anyone do it? It was like stunted, weird man American.
You're right,
accent.
He does have a really specific... Go on, do it, Jen. Give it a go.
I can't even think of an American in my mind to even copy.
I don't know. I'm just Australian the
just
whole time.
Just being Australian.
I'm just constantly an Australian.
I did have, I have loads with Irish people from the years of miking people up that I can't, they won the sham. Just cannot.
Oh, you
reveal.
Absolutely have to reveal.
No.
But what was the end of Christopher Walken?
So
when did
I was like,
he was
wanted to
Walken?
Use the loo, right? So I was like, oh, we don't really technically have a loo, but if you're in a bad way, just use the fucking loo and so out you go.
Technically a loo, but it is.
Well, it was like not like a public loo, whatever.
Yeah.
And so he kind of shuffled back in there, and the other guy in the gallery came straight up and was like, do you know who that guy is? And I was like, no fucking idea. And he was like, that fucking Christopher Walken. And I was like, well, what are we supposed to do? would you say something
he's
to
loo.
He's in the loo.
Let's lock him in there.
Is there anything we need from him while he's here? And he just came out of the loo, but he's so strange. Like there was no way you could have said something like, excuse me, Christopher Walken, can you sign? And you couldn't. He was like on a different, he was existing in a different plane of existence. Like, there was no back and forth in our conversation. It was just stream of weird coming at me.
Oh, I am so jealous of what his existence must be like.
Oh, it was wild.
I just want to be way up there on a different plane.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, just operating this. Right, so I won't tell you anything about the Irish people because it'll get back to people. And just if you ever see me in a smoking area, ask me who's rude and I'll give you a strong list of who's rude and who's nice and what's not and who I've met.
Yeah.
But I just remembered that there was this one time I was in town, I was in college in DIT, I was in town pottering around and myself and a friend went into, do you remember BT2 on Grafton Street?
Yeah.
Wandering around, did a very empty, it was very quiet during the day. Like we should have probably been in college. And the next thing there's security guards and the front is locked and they mustn't have realized that we were in there and it was closed down for a private shopping event. And here I am stumbling around with my backpack looking at things in BT2 that I can't afford because Miley Cyrus was in the shop, right? So my friend beelined for it. She was playing in the Three Arena at the time.
What year was this?
Oh, this is probably 2009, 2010.
Oh, wow. So like
way back.
Early Miley.
Maybe 2011. Around that time. I mean, I was in college for a long time. From 2008 till some years later.
And did you come out of there with the qualification? Did you?
Did I what? I'm a podcaster now. had a great time. But anyway, yeah. So my friend made a beeline for Miley. She was one of the rudest people I've ever met in my entire life. Blaheen was my friend's name. And she turned around. She was like, oh, I couldn't get tickets to your gig. She's a real chatterbox. She's like, I really wanted to go see you in the 3 minutes and I couldn't get tickets. And Miley looked her up and down and went, I'm glad. And then Blaheen got the photo with her. And then
Blaheen,
I mean, these are like, you probably got 3 likes on Instagram, right? This is like early days of the gram. And then she looked at me and she was like, I suppose you want a photo as well. And I was like,
no.
I was like, I don't actually. But I was like, I'll go for one anyway. To say she's not even up to my tit. Like, she's so small. And it was one of the most awkward photos ever taken.
Surely it's somewhere.
It's on and off. Like, I deleted Instagram then after that. So not after that specific incident, but years later. But it must exist somewhere. It must. I bet Blaheen's the kind of person who still have Facebook. Hey Blaheen, if you're listening.
I just love Blaheen.
It's pushing
being
through.
Absolutely
unstoppable.
Knocked down.
Yeah, back again.
Miley just went through her. Yeah, and Blaheen's still glad. Like, I'll get the pic.
Yeah.
Yeah, so rude Miley Cyrus was one of my celebrity encounters.
That's a brilliant one.
Totally forgot about that. Yeah, met Miley Cyrus.
I've got, I don't have... Like, I feel like I've told mine. Like, I asked Justin Theroux to take a picture of me and my friends.
That's right. I remember this.
And he was so confused. And I should have known. Have I told you this before, Kat?
No.
I was at this, like, fashion show in New York. And I was there. I just met these 2 journalists. I was on, like, a trip of journalists covering it. And, like, we were all having a great time, like, in the crowd watching. And then I was like, oh, we should get a picture. And like, I think it was before I had a smartphone even. So I had a camera.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, we should get a picture. And like, I just asked this guy in a leather jacket if he'd take a picture of me and my friends. And he just had the weirdest weirdest response, like reaction. He didn't say, he just kind of went, he's kind of paralyzed, and then he kind of nodded and took the camera. And like, I should have known, like, he was very tanned.
Yeah, that's the key.
He was really tanned. And the thing is, and I became such an insane Leftovers fan after, way after this. Tragic. If I had only met him now, I would have smelled his hair. And I would have told him how much the Leftovers meant to me.
He touched his jacket.
It was very funny. He was kind of game. He kind of gamely took the pic and handed me back the phone, the picture, the camera. And then I turned back and the guy beside me was like, do you not even know what you just did there? And then the other one was like really awful. And it's this thing that I, every now and again, you know those nights when you decide to go through every single thing that you have done in
wrong.
Your entire something, life.
Yeah.
This is one that commonly comes up on those nights. So I was dispatched to interview Maeve Higgins.
Oh yeah.
Sorry if I told you this before.
No. Just recognize who she is.
It was after Extraordinary came out.
Yeah.
The film she wrote and starred in with Will Forte, who I do quite
fancy.
Not even in the looks, more so just his energy. I just think we'd be really good together. And obviously I'm shit scared of Maeve Higgins because she's fucking brilliant and terrifying intellect and very, very funny and cool. So anyway, I was dispatched. I was interviewing her for Image Magazine and I got to the place. It was like a house on Marion Square. I didn't realize. I thought it was just going to be like, I'm here. I have my recorder. I'm going to interview Maeve Higgins. They'll probably give me 15, 20 minutes or something. And then it turned out it was more of a junkety thing. So, you know, you see them online, those interviews with celebrities where they're sitting in front of the poster of their film.
Yeah.
And there's some journalist opposite them and it's filmed. So those things take place. The celebrities will pitch up to a location. They'll stay there all day and journalist after journalist after journalist just comes in and you get a 5-minute slot and they film them and every outlet gets their videos back right away. So that's what I basically was suddenly sucked into. I wasn't prepared for this. Didn't realize it was going to be on camera. Didn't realize that Will Forte was going to be there either. And so basically the whole thing was turned on its head. I was like, this is not what I was planned for at all. And so basically they brought me in to, and I tried to tell them that I didn't want the video.
Yeah.
But they kind of were like, no, just get on with it and shut up and come on. And so I kind of was pulled into this room that was like pitch black with all of the camera lights, camera men, huge crew for some reason. It was so intimidating. Maeve Higgins, Will Forte sitting right there. I am like falling over every stray wire and piece of antique furniture in my vicinity, trying to get to the chair. I think it took me about 8 minutes to get from the door to the chair. It was absolutely terrifying. And then I had this complete like, just like mind went on hiatus. And when I came to, it seems that I was doing my crow impression for Maeve and Will. And enough awareness to be like, are you doing a bird impression? And I was going,
And what were they doing?
They looked like, truly, is this somebody's make-a-wish? So I think what had happened was I was searching desperately for something to say and I'd like, was just thrown. I was so thrown. I wasn't supposed to be on camera with celebrities. And anyway, there was a crow in the film. And I think I said something like how I really love how I love the crow motif in the film. And I love crows. Then went.
Oh, God.
And I truly often think about how one day that video might resurface.
Oh, I hope it's somewhere.
And it'll be one like an account online. It'll be like, oh, my God. Lol at this
loser with her
anyway, sorry, thank you.
No, that's good. This is Scott. I'm thinking now about all the others. You forget them
because you do forget people. Them you unless forget you've them. Kind of been telling them over and over and over.
Yeah, yeah. And the work stuff like the junkets. I met Samantha from Sex and the City.
she's
a bit mad. Pleasant but like very strange. She looked dead down the camera and said something really funny. I can't remember what it was. It's like a hopeful quote to the listeners, and it was like, there is, I need to find the video. The video is definitely still there in the place he used to work for. Richard E. Grant, gentleman.
Naturally.
Absolutely lovely. The cast memoir of Harry Potter.
Pocket Full of Happiness.
The cast of Harry Potter.
Yeah, for work.
What were they like?
Lovely. Very nice. It was after one. The twins. Very, very nice.
I can't remember their name.
The Weasley Fred twins.
The Weasley twins.
Weasley, yes. Yeah. Did a little sit down interview with them. They were lovely. Yeah, all very good. You do meet.
So there really was two of them, was there?
There was two of them, yeah.
I thought that was a bit of movie magic.
Got a little picture with me in the middle. Little Weasley twin sandwich.
Two of them barely up to your tit, were they?
Just Cassie meeting tiny, tiny celebrities.
Well, they have to fit on the TV somehow. And to bring you to a story where lookalikes are important.
Yes. Excellent segue.
Segue. I'm going to tell you one of these bank robberies that I think is absolutely genius from a man called Anthony Curcio, who is now an American author, public speaker and motivational, you know, person in general. He was born in Washington in 1980 and as a teenager, very popular, talented, was captain of the football team and the basketball team at Monroe High School. He broke many records in the sporting field. And was generally like well liked and a very successful teenager. He went on to play football at the University of Idaho, which was his childhood dream. And all was going well until he suffered a ligament tear, right? And it ended his college football career, and introduced him to Vicodin. So he quickly became addicted to prescription pills. And after he began experimenting with withdrawals and even injured himself unintentionally by kicking an oak coffee table repeatedly in order to obtain more pills. So he was in and out then. His family sent him to drug rehabilitation facilities. So unfortunately, though, he was completely addicted, and the painkiller addiction took over, and everything he did was with the view to accessing more drugs.
Oh, geez, I know the way.
So, his addiction progressed over the years, and then so too did his involvement in illegal activities. So by his mid-20s, he'd already had several thefts on his record, scams, loan sharking, all that kind of stuff, right? So things were dire for Anthony. But he pulled off what I think is one of the most, well, I think he had an idea, which I think is one of the most impressive I've ever seen for a bank robbery. So for 3 months, Anthony observed a Brinks armored car as it made its deliveries to the Bank of America branch in Monroe. So he took notes of the schedule of the car. He was doing a diagram of the locations that would pull up into the location of the bank's cameras. He noted where there were blind spots. And he also sat down and figured out how much money was being transferred and how much he estimated was coming out of the ATM. So like what better, you know, what when is the best to strike essentially. So he was looking at the police protocol around responses to bank robberies and what they might do. And he then was obviously contemplating his getaway. So for weeks he spent, he was looking at a nearby creek in Woods Creek and thinking about how he could potentially use the creek as a getaway. So he attempted using a jet ski in a practice run, but didn't feel it was fast enough. So he developed a pulley cable system that allowed him to quickly pull himself and large bags of cash upstream using a connected canvas wrapped inner tube. So like it's like a big dinghy essentially that you would use in like sports on water sports, mm-hmm. not dissimilar to a banana boat. So he like jockeyed that all up around the creek, had this whole pulley system, so he had his timing to a T. He was able
and
to
he'd
get
pull
it.
Himself by hand.
He'd pull himself with
on
the
pulleys.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. But he'd get like a good distance away.
That's genius.
He'd be able to escape.
So he's not hitting the roads.
He's not hitting the roads. No one would think to go down and check the creek. Right?
I love it.
Now, not only was that really clever,
it's very Tom Sawyer.
Just before the bank robbery, he took to Craigslist and he put up an ad seeking 15 to 20 workers for a fictitious city cleanup project. He promised the workers $28.50 an hour. They were told to wear jeans, a blue shirt, work shoes, and a yellow safety vest. And they told the applicants they needed to bring safety goggles and a painter's mask. So he directed them to meet at the Bank of America parking, car park at the time he was planning to rob the armored car. So on the 30th of September 2008, Anthony, dressed identical to all the decoys, pretended to work.
Deadly.
It's so clever, isn't it? Pretended to work the grounds near the bank, wearing a blue shirt, jeans, yellow safety vest, work boots, and a painter's mask. Then he pepper sprayed the armored car guard who was pushing a dolly loaded with money to the bank. The pepper spray forced the guard to reach for his eyes and release the cart that he held. He grabbed two bags of money containing more than $400,000 and then ran towards the creek. Meanwhile, the police arrive and they're just met with 15 to 20 men who fit the description of the robber.
Absolutely amazing.
Fucking clever, isn't it? He had also jockeyed up his rig out, like his outfit was done on Velcro, so he did the quick release pull off thing. Oh, so stunning. Like very quickly was
the
able to pull off his outfit.
Attention to detail here is
so
chef's
stunning
kiss.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
So at the water's edge, he threw the money into the tube, pulled himself up the creek with the cables he'd previously strung. He got about 200 yards upstream and exited the creek behind several businesses on the opposite side of the highway from the bank. So he removed his wig and workers' clothes that had been attached by Velcro, revealing an entirely different outfit underneath. We love a reveal.
Nice.
He climbed into the trunk of a getaway vehicle and with an associate and left. The whole careful planning and unusual getaway gained national attention. The timing of the robbery, it was really impressive. The timing of the robbery was incredible. And they nicknamed him DB Tuber.
After DB Cooper.
Very good. Famous, which we've covered before, the 1970s hijacker who hijacked a plane. Parachuted out, never to be seen again.
But how much money did DB Cooper get again?
Oh, a rake of money, but the notes have never been traced. Uh-huh. They've never found them in circulation again. We know the way they've got the serial numbers on them, whatever. So all was going extremely well for DB Tuber, or the Craigslist robber, as they call him. But like he was just really impressive. People were like, fair fucking play to you. It's kind of like a Robin Hood thing if you're stealing from the bank and it's
you earned it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His undoing came about a month after the bank robbery when a homeless man reported to police that before the robbery, he had seen a man drive up to the Bank of America and retrieve a disguise from behind a bin. The man found it suspicious enough to write down the license plate number of the car, which he later provided to police. The car was registered to Anthony. What the man had seen was one of Anthony's practice runs to ensure proper timing of the heist.
So close.
Obviously, because it was America, he was probably sentenced to death, was he?
Well,
calm just down, love America. Money.
He was sentenced to 72 months in prison. Oh. But like that evidence would have been circumstantial, except he was still at the robberies. So just as he returned from Las Vegas, the FBI began surveilling him as a suspect for that robbery. So they retrieved his DNA from a drink bottle disposed of by Anthony at a petrol station and compared it to the DNA from the mask and wig discarded a short distance from the scene of the robbery.
Unbelievably
DNA samples
close.
Matched and he was arrested in Washington getting out of a luxury SUV with $17,000 in cash. Now I will say,
imagine walking around just having $7,000.
Just the weight.
$7 like, in cash. Yeah, any of it.
Any cash. So he was, he was sentenced to 17 months in federal prison for that.
We support you.
But now, tell us about his motivational speaker career.
So he now
is he on Insta?
Probably is. Anthony J. Curcio. I'm sure he is. Here he is in 2014 giving, and he's very good looking.
Is it Curcio with a C or a K?
C-U-R-C-I-O.
So, do you
Italian
have
Italian going on there maybe?
Maybe a little bit. He's, yeah, let me see. Does he probably has a website?
Well, he's got a LinkedIn.
Tell us
he does.
Slow opening here, guys.
Now, let me tell you another one.
Yeah.
This one is affectionately known as the 300 million yen robbery. This is again, it seems to be the weak part of the money delivery system is when they're taking it from the car into the bank.
Yeah. I see.
There yeah. has to be a smarter way to do that.
Because underground tunnel, anybody?
Well,
I've got a guy.
So this one is in 1968, on the 10th of December, it's in Japan, right? It's in Tokyo, and it's a very specific bank branch, and I'm not going to try and pronounce the name of it. But bank employees were transporting just shy of 300 million yen, which was about $817,000.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
And they were transferring in the trunk of a Nissan Cedric company car. Okay. In those metal boxes, you know?
Okay.
That just seems like a really casual car to be.
I guess it was in a metal box.
They were in metal boxes. Well. They were fine or whatever. And it's in the 60s. So the young men who were transporting this were just about to go into the bank when a police officer pulled up on a motorbike and stopped the car about 200 meters from its destination in a street next to actually the Tokyo prison. So the police officer informed the bank employees that their bank branch manager's house had been destroyed by an explosion, and a warning had been received that an explosive device might have been planted in the car. So he got all the four employees to get out of the vehicle, and the police officer crawled under the car to examine it for an explosive thing. Moments later, he comes running out, shouting that the car was about to explode. There's smoke and flames coming from underneath the car. So he gets them all to evacuate the car and run away from it as fast as they can. So they all retreated. He got into the car and drove away. Genius, isn't it?
So the plan all along. So he had set like a smoke bomb.
Spoiler, he was not a police officer. Gosh. He was just a man in a policeman's uniform on a motorbike. So the bank employees believed, obviously, that he had been a police officer and accepted the story about the bomb because threatening letters had been sent to the bank manager beforehand. The smoke and the flames turned out to be just a flare that he had ignited whilst under the car. Very clever. At some point, he abandoned the bank's car and transferred the metal boxes to another car that was also stolen beforehand. That car, too, was abandoned and the boxes transferred once again to another previously stolen vehicle. There were 120 pieces of evidence left at the scene of the crime, including the police motorbike, which had been painted white. However, the evidence was primarily common everyday items scattered on purpose to confuse the police investigation. A 19-year-old man, the son of a police officer, was suspected of the robbery. But he just because he had no alibi. However, he died later of potassium cyanide poisoning later that year, actually only a few days later. And the money was not found near him or anywhere near his death.
And did they believe he died by suicide?
They'd believe he died by suicide and was considered not guilty, according to official records. So I guess maybe the pressure and the suspicion that he was guilty panicked him. There was a massive police investigation, like photos posted, a list of suspects, including over 100,000 names, 170,000 policemen participated in the investigation. It was the largest investigation in Japanese history. There was examination of fingerprints gathered from the scene and comparison to those on file. 6 million fingerprints were compared individually, but no matches were found. On December 12, 1969, a year later, a 26-year-old man was suspected. He was arrested on an unrelated charge, but he had an alibi. The robbery occurred on the day he was taking a proctored examination. So arrests were made. That arrest was made, but the arresting officer was accused of abuse of power and he was let go. And so, yeah, I think to this day, never been caught.
Get out. So scot-free.
Yeah. Scot-free. Isn't that beautiful?
You love to hear it.
To hear them getting away,
don't you? What is it?
It's just because they hate the banks.
Yeah,
they're fucks who fuck us.
True.
And anytime that they get fucked, we all have to dig them back out of it.
Well, that's true.
They're stupid pricks.
So at least one guy gets off.
Somebody getting one over on a bank, I support it. Listen, Anthony's written a book.
Oh, go on.
Heist and High. It's very, I think they could have done better with the title.
I know, yes.
But it is all about his struggle with addiction.
Ah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's on Amazon and it's all about his descent from a life full of promise into the hell of prescription drug addiction and the need to do anything, even rob an armored truck for what he thought would be that one last fix.
Mm.
I really want to know more about this guy, but actually, like, I don't know, I'm not finding him overly available on the internet and I want him to motivate me. Like, I want to seek his services.
He's the guy. Thank you, Cassie.
Hold on, I've got a few more, but I'll tell you this one just because I loved this one. Very briefly, there was another man called, I'm not going to get into his, but Salim Kara. He basically was a man who fixed, and I'm intrigued by this one because this is what my dad does. He fixed the ticket machines in like the Lewis and the train stations and stuff like that. And yeah, that's what this man did. So he had access to like where the coins were going in, and he got a car antenna and a magnet, and he would just take a couple of coins from every machine that he
was
serviced.
Fixing, was
so it was like a negligible amount.
But sure, how much money could he possibly have stolen?
Wait for it.
What did he do with the car antenna and the magnet? Sorry, I'm
so he
dumb.
Stuck it down. He stuck it.
Retrieve the coins from the machine he was fixing.
Yeah, but if he was fixing the machine, could he not just open the machine?
Because then there would have been a separate lock for the money.
It
for years, and he got away with it because it was never a significant amount to warrant any suspicion. The machines would just be down a little bit, but like, you just write it off. Do you know what I mean? And he had, in total, over a period of several years, stolen $2 million worth.
Wow.
Yeah. In Uganda.
Holy God.
Yeah. So he, yeah, I love that story. But let me just, I just want to tell you this very, very quickly, is the great Buenos Aires bank heist. And there's a film based on this one. So there were two men primarily involved in this one. I'll get it. Very, very. One was called Fernando Araujo. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but bear with. And he was the one who started kind of concocting the plan back in 2003. So he'd looked at the bank. Oh, this is actually a beautiful theme has emerged from the last couple of episodes. He'd looked at this bank and he wanted to rob it. And he wanted to come up with a really clever way to do it. So he started exploring the sewage tunnels underneath the bank, and he rented a house nearby so that he could properly investigate them. He posed as an architecture student and he called the public works agency to get information on how the ground might handle tunnels. And then he convinced a local motorcycle mechanic to join his team as a civil engineer. And they calculated how to drill 15 meters diagonally into the bank. So under the pretense of it being studious and them exploring tunnels or hobby tunnelists or whatever, they began digging tunnels underneath to the bank, essentially making their essentially being able to get into the building's basement and their sewers and like to access the vaults of the bank. So their plan was coming together. They found more men to be part of the heist. A man called Ruben Latour was recruited as the muscle. Mario was designated police negotiator. They recruited another man referred to as the Doc, and just bringing in all these like sophisticated thieves, essentially. So after years of planning on this, they a plan emerged. So rather than going through the sewer to exit local waters, they began digging deeper tunnels right into like underneath the city. And then they brought an old van and customized it to have a floor hatch so they could park it above a manhole and directly climb into the vehicle without going out to the street. So they recruited another man as a driver for that van. So essentially they've spent, like, they started this in 2003. It's 2006 when they go to pull off the robbery. They've spent 3 years digging these, like, as far as anyone's considered, completely okay tunnels from the bank into the sewer, figured out their route through the sewers, find a manhole, and then a carefully constructed van life project that has a hole in it is going to allow them to go from the manhole straight into the van and then drive off as genius. If it's a cartoon. Like, it is just genius. But what they did in the actual actual bank robbery was even better. So on Friday, January 13th, 2006, all the other guys who weren't in the tunnels, who had been brought into this heist, stormed through the front door of the bank, guns in hand, ready to take hostages.
Okay.
They order everyone to get on the floor, including the bank manager. And then they told, then they were trying to get them to bring them down to the basement. So Ahero and Beto were on the bank's ground level, managing hostages and securing exits.
Oh, so their plan was never to go in via the tunnels. The plan was to escape via the tunnels.
They're up there with basically causing a commotion, right?
Okay.
Police obviously descend upon the bank. And then they begin these fake, the police negotiator begins these fake negotiations with the cops to get more time. So he threw on a fake mustache and glasses to throw off the police and snipers to the bank window. And they're like, yeah, we'll release two hostages, whatever. Meanwhile, down in the basement, they're there using a special cannon to break open the deposit boxes as quickly as possible. So they're just like out there taking things, and they'd cracked open 143 boxes by the time it was time to escape. So your man who's negotiating the police is like, bring us some pizzas, bring us some soda, we'll have a little food and then we'll surrender. So the bank...
But did the guys upstairs have guns?
Yes, but not real guns.
Okay.
So they knew that they would if they got caught, they'd get a lesser sentence. So essentially they go and they storm the bank. They hold up this heist. They say, take us to wherever they are.
So they're like, the guys are already inside. They think that this heist is taking place, but actually another heist is taking place.
But like, and
they're
negotiating for pizza. One of the guys that's actually there upstairs.
Well, I don't. The robbers splashed chlorine throughout the bank to cover the DNA and tossed random strands of hair. But I mean, like, they're getting so much. And because they've used fake guns up there, they knew that they would get a lesser sentence. So
were they planning to escape or surrender, though? The guys upstairs. They were planning to escape out the tunnel.
No, I think they were always there as a decoy, and they were going to go out and surrender, maybe just do a slight amount of time.
Okay.
But because there was nothing to connect them to the lads downstairs, they could just be like, that was coincidentally another heist. Now, hold on. Let me tell you if they got away properly. So the robbers, where was I lost? Oh, yeah. He's at the stage where he's like, bring us some pizzas, bring us some soda, we'll have a little food and then we'll surrender. The robbers splashed chlorine throughout the bank to cover their DNA and tossed random strands of hair around to throw off the crime scene investigators. It just, like, fucking crime 101. Bring someone else's DNA into the situation.
Yeah, there's some great touches really good, here. Never knew that about chlorine.
Oh, they did. They ran down then and they escaped into their tunnels and into the sewer without a trace. So two small boats, one with a motor, awaited them, but the motor wouldn't start, so the men had to paddle through the sewer to reach their van, which was 14 blocks away.
Crawl through 10 miles of shit.
But they did. They successfully made it to the van and drove to their safe house, and the police thought they were still inside. So the men all divided the money evenly amongst themselves and parted ways. And authorities were initially absolutely baffled by the escape. They didn't even realize the gang had tunneled out until a bank worker spotted a piece of out of place furniture covering the hole.
Genius. So they bought themselves loads of time.
Yeah. So in it, they found booby traps and a note from a hero that read in Spanish, "In a rich neighborhood without weapons or grudges, just money. It's just money and not love." So picture perfect job. The take was massive. The police had no leads.
Much
no
did
one
they
had
get?
Been injured, and they seemed to have gotten away with the heist of the century and would be able to enjoy it, except for one loose end. So in the weeks after the robbery, Beto noticed something amiss, and he said, "I came back home one day and my stash is out of place." I saw the stack of money had dropped quite a bit, and his wife Alicia had admitted to him that she had taken about $300,000 of the cash and some safety deposit loot without asking permission. They had been together for 18 years, but had gotten into a massive argument. Oh. And Beto demanded that she bring back what she had taken immediately and left the house with his remaining loot in a huff. And then she called the police and turned him in.
No.
She is screwing herself as well.
Yeah. So
God, it is the ultimate fuck you, though.
It was the end of it. That was,
you know,
the
when
it.
The fuck them is gonna fuck you so much, but you're so fucked up with them that you don't care.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's what did them in. And in 2010, Beto was sentenced to 15 years in prison. Herrero was given 14. Some of the others got 10, 9. One was given 14. So
all
the
that
doc,
work.
The guy who was referred to as the doc, and another fellow who was involved in the van, who was called the kid, was never
caught.
Was never caught.
And they got their share.
I'm assuming they got to keep their share, because if they couldn't catch them, then, you know.
Oh, I hope, but after, somebody's having a nice time.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to pull off a heist of that size, you got to get out.
Even if you're going
out
into prison.
You got to
like
get
you're
out.
Sort of a legend.
Yeah. And that's
like you're, you know, just a random pedo coming in to get the head beaten off you. You're kind of royalty.
Yeah, I think a well-constructed heist is the creme de la creme of crimes, especially if you rob from a bank. It's a victimless crime.
And you should be allowed to keep some of it after you served your time. The work
you
that went in
should. But
to
you know
the
what you should do is, if you do get sentenced, is you should treat that time inside as kind of like a bit of an almost, not paid internship, but like your costs are being covered.
Mm.
You've got a lot of time here to work on the next job.
True.
Yes. Figure it all out. Use your time inside. You know, work smarter, not harder.
Escape, perhaps.
Well, you could escape, or you could just plan, you know.
Round two.
Really pulling it off this time.
Yeah, really getting good.
I can't believe there's been no movies made of any of those.
Such a feel good
crime. The last
crime.
One is, there's a documentary on the last one.
The Spanish lads.
Yeah.
Okay.
Argentina or Buenos Aires, where is that?
South America. I love Anthony. I don't know why he's really, really kind of,
He's stuck
with me. His little story. And I feel like, why didn't he sell the rights to his book? Like, why isn't that a film?
I just think it's so clever. All the elements of it, the escape,
the decoys
is genius. Like,
do you know what was good about Anthony's?
There's like
as
a
well.
Deeper story about addiction and recovery.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a whole, you're right. That's
it's a
great, a
brilliant
story.
Film.
Thank you. Are you going to take us out with something good, Sofo?
I don't know how we're doing on time.
We have, but I think that's it, because this is split in two, but we've done an hour there.
That's,
will I take his out on the 9-month cruise and just,
oh yes, please.
I'll do Scandal on the High Seas for next
excellent.
Episode.
So the 9-month cruise is this wonderful, I'll just wait for them to pass.
Sorry, the excitement outside there.
I love getting new toys.
Seb's got a new toy. Papa's got a brand new bag.
So the 9-month cruise has taken over TikTok, and it's some of the most entertaining but banal drama you could ever come across. It's just like TikTok has given us access to petty shit all over the world that is just, oh, it's just, and once something ends, another thing begins, and it's just
the whole
magical
concept.
I haven't told you about my new podcast idea. Okay, it's really niche. Okay, and I'm gonna find it. I know I'll struggle to get it off the ground, but if any creeps are listening and they think they like the sound of this and they want to produce and do the whole thing, I'll be your biggest listener. Okay, here's the, okay, the area of interest is Irish theater. Okay,
yeah,
it's an exciting, very gossipy scene, but very niche.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, look, the main thing with any podcast, as we all know, is in the name.
Yeah,
I've come up with the name for the podcast that's going to detail, you know, local gossip in Irish theatre. Heavy pettying. 100 years.
Very good.
Irish theatre being a messy bitch.
Yeah, no, that's
but
true.
If you can put it into anything, like, you can just, somebody can just use heavy pettying and make a podcast about it, and I'll just, yeah, be your fan.
Petty stuff is I live for it. So for anyone who hasn't been on TikTok or hasn't known anything about the 9-month cruise, basically it's the Royal Caribbean Ultimate World Cruise. It's taking place on the Serenade of the Seas ship, and it's set to take passengers to over 60 countries across all seven continents. There are four legs of the cruise: the Americas, which kicked off on the 10th of December to the 11th of February.
Americas.
Asia Pacific, which goes from 11th February to May 9th.
So they go straight in. There's no gap.
There's no gap, yeah, okay, right? Then they go to the Mediterranean. After the Middle East, they go to the Mediterranean and then Europe and beyond. And people can opt to join any part of the tour, which was a rule that was only introduced very, very close to the ship's departure. So this 9-month cruise is absolutely extortionately priced.
Give me
the cheapest option for,
can't be worse than Olivia Rodrigo in April in Three Arena. I'm looking at a resale ticket for 200 quid.
Oh.
It's a little worse. It's marginally worse than that.
No, it cannot be worse.
For 9 months, 60 grand is entry.
60 grand is the cheapest.
Mm-hmm. And now when
more
we say
more expensive options
entry,
go up to 118,000 per person.
And guys, for 60 grand.
But 60 grand now, all in, food, everything.
Yes.
Think about your...
No, think about this.
The saving you're
a
making.
A windowless interior room.
For 9 months.
On a moving, petrol-fumed ship.
Hotel, essentially.
Surrounded
a
by
shopping
some
center on
of
the seas.
Most annoying people ever born.
So you're basically inside Dundrum Town Shopping Centre.
For 9 months. But the crowd will not change. You are groundhog daying yourself for 60 grand.
How many people are there here on this ship? Like, do we know what's the capacity?
Oh, great question. I'm not sure.
I'll check that while,
like,
you go,
you know,
on.
Is it a kind of a cast of 200 people or like 200,000?
The thing is, it is chaos on this ship.
2,500 guests.
Oh my God. So basically school. Like
school.
Our school was
secondary
about 2,500 people. Yeah.
No escape.
No escape. No escape. That's school. You're in school and inside Dundrum Town Shopping Centre.
There has been, you know, when you're with that amount of people on the open seas for that long, I can't imagine that only you take a law upon yourselves. Like, it's a different
custom of the sea.
Like, a society has formed, and with that, different hierarchies and whatever else. And they've had to create their own world order to deal with themselves for 9 months. And so they have, what has happened is the people who originally bought their expensive stint on the ship, it was, you could only do the 9 months. There was no getting on and off. They only wanted serious cruisers. And as they got closer,
no time wasters,
just people are willing to commit to the 9 months entirely.
You will have this holiday.
Then when they got closer, they hadn't sold enough tickets, so they started opening up different legs where people could jump on and off the ship, and they could come for just little things,
like
totally
the Dublin
diluting
hop on, hop off bus,
yes,
yeah,
but diluting the premise of the 9 month cruise. Just, you know, dissolving it down to just a regular stupid cruise. And so this pissed off the people who bought the original tickets for multiple reasons. First of all,
yeah,
the people who are buying only stints of the, or different legs, they're known as the leggers, they are obviously not considered to be in the same financial bracket as the people who've been able to afford the 9 months and things. So there's been this it's only been going on for a little while.
Weeks.
And there's just been this incredibly, like, classist drama that has come from it already.
So what's really interesting about these cruises is you can inherit a super
traveler, like a badge, like a platinum level traveling cruiser, right? Mm-hmm. Your dad, let's say, went on 100 cruises. He dies and you inherit his platinum level. So that level on a cruise gets you your own special restaurants that only other platinum level guests can attend. You eat different food, you go to different areas, you've got better rooms, you've got specific butlers that bring you around. Yeah. You've access to things that the other leggers don't.
How do you prove that you've been on all these other cruises, or does it have to be with the company?
It's with the company, but you are like the staff are, the whole fucking staff drama is a whole other thing of this, because they have to learn off who the platinum travelers are. They know their names, they make sure that they're waited on hand and foot. It's the class wars that's going on.
It's insane.
But so like presumably, like, even, you know, your cheapest legger is still a wealthy person.
Yes. So that's why it's so comical.
The wealthy feuding with the very wealthy.
And it's the have and the have-yachts.
It's the wealthy feuding with the, like, exceptionally just absolutely bizarre wealthy that are... Like, there was one, it's kind of starting to gain notoriety on TikTok because there was one black creator. So there's a couple of people who were there who were like vlogging from the cruise and bringing you this like shit.
This just in.
And then there's people who are following the bloggers who are coming from the ship and compiling it all together into what they're calling a 9-month reality TV show. Epic. And what is it they call it? Ship Happens, I think, is what they're what they're calling it on the thing. So there's people now who've dedicated themselves to just giving you the recap of what's gone down on the ship during the day.
And can you watch them on YouTube?
I'm sure you can. But it started off with not minor, but it started off because some of the black creators were like, if I'm asked, am I working on this ship one more fucking time, then someone's going to go over the edge, right? But then besides the class wars and besides just the behavior of exceptionally obnoxious rich people, you have to bear in mind that it's just free drink essentially all day long because their thing covers it and they're essentially on a big floating pub. So things are going crazy. There was rumors then about a COVID outbreak on the ship. You've got to consider all of that when you're living in such close proximity to insane people. And then this week there was flooding on the ship because obviously the North Sea is going viral for being very treacherous at the moment.
She's a messy bitch.
And so people who've been on the ship in their fancy sea, like in their fancy like window rooms, have had to move into lesser rooms because they've the ship has flooded in some of these fancy areas. So it is just, look, it's drama. Oh yeah, it was it's Brandy Lake, who's one of the creators, who said, if I get asked if I work on the ship one more fucking time, it's gonna be a long 9 months. So the Royal Caribbean have not actually commented, according to Time, have not responded to comment yet. And the cruise ship is now making its way to Antarctica. So there's, I think people...
Have you heard about the guy? He's a big TikToker.
He went on, he's gone on to the ship. He got a brand deal.
Some brand deal sent him on. Yeah. But he is tearing strips off the ship, which is kind of shabby. Like...
Well, he said that people won't speak to him because he's a legger. Like, and he's like coming in, he's... you know, he's not being taken seriously. And because he's obviously someone with a platform, basically a book company sponsored him. And we're like, if you go in and like pretend that you're reading all the time. And like, so he's doing like these book reviews and he's like, here's what I'm reading amongst the drama and yada, yada, yada.
Oh, amazing.
He says that no one will speak to him because he's obviously just a blow in and that they've just created their whole weird, like weird, awful society on this cruise. And guys, we're only a month in. We've got 8 more months to go of this drama.
So someone's gotta like get pregnant, murdered, gotta die.
Yeah, COVID's gotta, like, COVID, there's gotta be some gastro bugs gonna fly around the ship fairly
fucking
soon.
Triangle of sadness style.
There's already been a big storm, so there's been flooding.
Yeah,
it's absolute chaos, and I love it.
I have a fucking question, but it's gone off me. What was it? Shit. Is about the kind of the setup here. Nobody. Oh yeah, the staff. I presume the staff have some kind of like can't post things, can't enter the discourse at all. Can they?
I'd imagine
because we're gonna get some good tell-alls after.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah,
all yeah. those staff people better be like, getting agents.
Oh, yeah.
Like, right now.
There's a guy.
Starting who's... the books that they're going to bring out yeah. now. Now. Every time you're not on shift, just crank out a few thousand words and you'll be fucking...
good to go.
Sell it to the highest bidder once you're in dock.
You'll be like, what's her name? Gypsy Rose.
Yeah.
As soon as that your sentence is complete, you want to explode onto the scene. You with want merch. The reveal.
Oh my God, they did that so quick. Like, the her book is out so quick, it's actually only available as an ebook. Like, you cannot get it. It's not published.
The presses just couldn't do it.
Oh, and like, it includes illustrations of her time over prison. I'm gonna dip into it now as soon as we finish up recording here.
Yeah, I'm interested in you doing this revisit to that story with yeah. all that we know now.
So yeah, there's bingo cards going around with the Ultimate World Cruise of like what is going to happen. So on the bingo That's card for the next 9 months, you've got mass norovirus, weather mishaps, a wedding, lobster style sunburn, brands begin to sponsor passengers, which I think is only a matter of time.
Yeah.
Ship tech problems, port errand runs, someone goes home early. There's talk of people getting off and leaving, but nobody I don't think has yet. Mass STIs, the next big travel creator is going to be made. Minor mystery to solve, duty free space, someone gets left behind, someone has a mental breakdown.
Overboard, man overboard.
Yeah, cliques forming, knocked up or someone gives birth, someone falls off a boat. There's got to be someone on it who's pregnant who doesn't realize
yet. 100%.
Yeah.
So someone will probably
and there
give birth.
Is doctors on board. I mean, it's a lot, it's a few thousand people, so they're gonna have, and they do dock and you can get off.
Yeah.
But it's ultimately the best crack ever.
But yeah, it's just.
I have to say their website is shoddy. Like, I keep clicking reserve now, just to see what my options are, and it's not loading.
It's overwhelmed with people
You're
trying to
overwhelmed
reserve.
Overwhelmed with people trying to leg her on.
So yeah, the flooding is significant now. So
so it's actually sinking.
It's I think this is just like it is the perfect. It's the Gen Z Titanic. Like, it's the
class.
Perfect just bit of drama to follow you through, because once again, when crimes happen to rich people, victimless, it's fine.
Thank you, Cass, and thank you, dear listeners.
Thank
if you,
you
want
so
more
much, listeners, if you are currently on
the 9 month cruise,
Ultimate World Cruise, get in touch with us,
please.
We'll see you next time.
Bye. Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win. And also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.